Over the past year and a half, we've spoken several times here with Kanan Makia, who was long an expatriate Iraqi dissident and writer. He is now director of the Iraq Memory Foundation in Baghdad, which aims to document the abuses of the Ba'athists, and he's also a professor of Islamic and Middle Eastern studies at Brandeis University. He joins us from Boston. Welcome once again to the program.
Hello, Robert.
First, the issue of sovereignty and the questions raised by differences between American and British remarks yesterday. How important is it to you that come July, the use of military force on Iraqi soil be approved by the Iraqi interim government?
I think it's very important. The development of events in the last year has shown that the idea of occupation did not fit Iraq well. Let me say, many of us opposed it very rigorously back when it was first espoused before the war. And I think the United States and the coalition in general has now realized that that was not the way to go. And the quicker we end at what is technically an occupation regime, the better.
You have been aligned in recent years with the Iraqi National Congress, the expatriate group, which has now been cut off by Washington. Its leader, Ahmed Chalabi, was the target of a raid by security forces. He doesn't seem to figure high in the esteem of UN envoy Lakhdar Brahimi, who's assembling the interim government. In your view, what went wrong in the relationship between the expatriates and the Americans and the Iraqi people?
Very many things. There is the strategic error of occupation, of which essentially translated into non-reliance on Iraqis.
You mean as opposed to instantly recognizing a government in Iraq?
Mm-hmm. Working with a provisional government up front. There was no Iraqi partner. The coalition forces entered Iraq with hardly anybody who knew the country as part of those forces. That was a strategic error of the greatest magnitude. Now I would turn to the other key sort of strategic error, I think, or error is not even the right word here, failing, that has taken place in the last year. And it's hard for me to speak about, but it is a failure of Iraqi leadership inside the governing council, and in particular a failure of the so-called Shiite bloc inside that leadership to assume the mantle of, if I might call it, responsibility that its numbers and its weight in the society at large impose upon it. Looking back at the track record, I must say they have failed dismally.
What specifically should the Shiites have done in Baghdad? What specifically should Ahmed Chalabi have done that he didn't do in the past year?
The Shiites began very early on in the governing council to form themselves as a bloc. They then started to meet separately and caucus separately. So they right away created the impression that there was no one there to speak for the country as a whole. And even those brave individuals among the Shiites, among the Sunnis, amongst the Kurds, inside the governing council, who did not want to go this route, were eventually forced by this this confessional sectarian attitude to separate themselves into different camps. One could see it happening. One could see sectarian positions being forced onto individuals who were very reluctant in the first place to adopt them. And so the net result was, incidentally, a decline in the popularity of the governing council in the course of the several months that it was there, and its inability to speak for the whole of Iraq. And finally, its also inability to act in any way that was useful in either the Fallujah crisis or the Muqtada Sadr crisis.
Why would Mr. Chalabi and his regime have been any more popular a year ago in power than they've been over the past year, as they've been seen as the people whom the U.S. had wanted to install in power ultimately?
This was a transitional body in which Iraqis took responsibility for their own affairs. An event as great as the liberation of a whole people cannot be engineered without their participation in some form. You needed Iraqis to help do it, even if they would be gone within a couple of years with the first elections that would come up. Let us suppose the so-called internal Iraqis would have resented this imposition. Very good. That resentment would have shown up in the first elections. And if they had proven themselves, if they had actually succeeded, well, so what? They would have been filtered out and others would have come in and gone. The point is that none of this was permanent.
Just briefly, you're going back to Iraq soon.
Yes.
And you've been back there most of the time.
I spent most of the year there, yes.
Do you go back confident that five-step timetable President Bush spelled out in his speech the other night is going to work, and that come a year and a half from now, we'll be approaching real elections that will elect a real parliament that will hold together an independent, truly independent, sovereign, and democratic Iraq.
I return to Iraq full of foreboding and fear, to be honest, Robert. But I am committed to this project, and I will stay there. I don't know what's going to happen. Much depends on the wisdom with which this government is selected. I think the route that we have gone down is very unfortunate and sad, and I have forebodings, to be honest.
Kanan Makia, thank you very much for talking with us once again.
Thank you, Robert.
Kanan Makia, professor of Islamic and Middle Eastern Studies at Brandeis University, is now director of the Iraq Memory Foundation in Baghdad. He spoke to us from Boston.